It's just after 6 o'clock here on WLUW Chicago. And now, ladies and gentlemen, broadcasting from the 100-watt Love Boat, 88.7 WLUW, and podcasting exclusively on OutsideTheLoopRadio.com, coming to you from a soundproof booth on a houseboat on a branch of the Chicago River, this is another edition of Outside the Loop Radio, Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine.
Thank you very much, little announcer guy. Very nice to see you again. Okay, wave across the booth. Very good. Welcome, everyone. Welcome back to another edition of Outside the Loop Radio, show number 43 here on your listener-supported community radio, WLUW. I'm your host, Mike Steven.
And I'm your executive producer, Andy Herman.
And we are back in the soundproof booth, as we always are each week here on Outside the Loop Radio, broadcasting from a different area of Chicagoland every week. And this week, the engineers over at LUW did a fantastic job of rigging up a houseboat for us to dock here right by Life's Too Short, the now defunct Life's Too Short, right on right off Division.
Division and Elston.
Yeah, Division and Elston. Mm-hmm. It's right up there. We see it because the periscope is up.
Up.
We're looking out of the porthole, so we're here in the soundproof booth. Well, I guess it's a houseboat. Mm-hmm. It's pretty much the booth on pontoons again, okay? I can't lie to the listeners, Andy. We've done it once before on the North Pond in Lincoln Park, but now we're broadcasting on pontoons on the Chicago River, docked right next to Life's
but
Too
Short.
But
we had the whole houseboat thing going on. You know, it's theater of the mind.
It is theater of the mind, but we're in the booth.
And you just blew it.
I can't
nice
lie.
Nice job.
It's all about the listeners, man. I cannot lie to them.
The staff, the engineering staff, works so hard and... You just blew our cover.
I like the curtains you put up, though, on the porthole. They look very nice. It needs that womanly touch, Andy Herman.
Hello.
And you have done that. Well, good to see you, my friend. And by the way, we are, like the little announcer guy said, you're almost above ground audio magazine, covering all sorts of local issues that don't always get a whole lot of mainstream attention. So that's what we're all about here on Outside the Loop. OutsideTheLoopRadio.com. is our website, OutsideTheLoopRadio.com. So go check that website out, and you can get to the podcast of the show and all that good stuff. Audio archives.
Lots of good stuff.
All right, now, I know I've talked about this before, but I really love cycling, okay? I love riding bikes. Mm-hmm. I'm not against that. I swear to you I'm not against that. But I talked about this on last week's show, how I was almost clipped by a couple cyclists just flying through the intersection. And I read a commentary from New City last week on how this guy Tom Lynch was writing how, you know, a lot of these cyclists don't even pay attention to the traffic laws. And I see that every day. I mean, but on the other hand, see, I'm really confused right now, Andy Herman. I'm very torn because I love cycling and I support cycling and the rights of cyclists, but you just can't be an idiot about it. Now, there's this thing called critical mass. I'm sure you've heard of.
Oh, yeah.
It's in Chicago. It's coming up on 10 years in September.
Oh,
it started in 97. And there's rumors that this is going to be the last critical mass. And if you don't know what critical mass is, it's basically just a bunch of cyclists who get together in Chicago, like 2,000 of them, and they ride through the streets. And basically, it's a movement to promote the use of bikes as a viable means of transportation. A lot of times people get stuck in the traffic, though, mm-hmm. when it happens, and it gets very annoying. I've been in that situation, too. And I was thinking to myself, but you know what? It's like, isn't it like kind of like a protest almost, or like a demonstration? Like, people have the right to do that.
Sure.
I was out, you know, on Lakeshore Drive years ago protesting. That was, you know, that was our right. We felt very strongly about that. So cyclists should be able to have that right, too, to celebrate bicycles. I just don't think they should be asses about it, you know? Like, when they go and they get off the bikes and they hold them over their head, like, yeah, uh-huh. Bike superiority over cars. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm an evil guy for driving my Ford Taurus. I am so sorry. But, and then, so, all right, so I was driving down here to the booth, and I'm thinking about this on my way over. Yes, I drove, by the way, everyone. The cyclists are going to wait outside now. And then I saw a cyclist go out in the middle of traffic and almost get killed. Just like he just shot out. He didn't have the right of way of anything. And I'm thinking, come on, you know? I mean, just people, I love the cyclists, but just be smart. Don't be killing yourselves out there. Be nice. Andy, we have a lot to do on this week's edition of Outside the Loop Radio. Later in the program, my friend, what are we doing?
Well, after talking about a brand new area code in the Chicago area, we'll be talking with someone about Local First Chicago, a local business movement here in the city.
Yes, we will. But first, we'll learn about why all of those beaches in Chicago have been closed so often this summer. Something to do with E. coli and bacteria. We'll learn all about that in just a second. The music this week comes from the local musicians Duval. This is off of their 2003 release called Volume and Density on Asian Man Records. This is Outside the Loop Radio. I'm Mike Steven. He's Andy Herman. We're in the soundproof booth on 88.7 WLUW.
What did you say? I can't hear anything with these headphones on. I like to play my music just as loud as it goes.
Now, last weekend, Andy, I ventured over to Montrose Beach up there, and it's really nice up
nice
there at Montrose
hot weekend.
Beach. Yeah, it was a good day to go to the beach. Now, my sister was actually playing in an ultimate frisbee tournament on the beach, so
really?
Here was my idea. Jenny and I went, and we thought, you know what? We can go watch Mia play. We can go watch her play Ultimate Frisbee. And literally, they're playing right on the beach, probably about 50 feet from the water of Lake Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
So we went to watch her play, and I was thinking, you know, it's like 95 degrees out here, so maybe when we're done, we can just go take a dip in Lake Michigan. Except for the fact that there were red flags all over the beach saying, no, go in the water. And which really sucked for the players, because the players were running around in 95-degree heat, and they couldn't get into the water. So they were pretty happy. They were pretty happy. No, they weren't. But this whole thing of closing the beaches, this whole issue, I thought to myself, well, you know, why exactly are we closing the beaches? We hear about E. coli and stuff like that, and obviously it's not good for us. But let's get to the bottom of this issue. So we decided to call up Ann Alexander. She is a senior attorney at the Natural Resources Defense Council, and she joins us via the phone here on Outside the Loop Radio. Ann, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Well, thank you for joining us. Now, it seems that the beaches this year have been closed a lot more than last year. I mean, is that true, or am I just imagining things?
That is essentially true. There have been more beach closings this year. The reasons are not entirely clear. Most of the speculation is that it has to do with weather patterns, more rain.
And not E. coli.
Well, no, that's what I mean is that the additional rain brings the E. coli to the beaches. And I should point out that although you've all probably heard bad things about E. coli, as it should be, E. coli comes in many strains, and the one we're dealing with actually is not one that you would have to worry about, but it's a marker for much worse things that are in the water. In other words, if you do a test and there's this particular strain of E. coli there, it means there are probably all kinds of other things in the water that can make you sick.
So E. coli is pretty much a bellwether that if there's bad stuff in the water, you have to look for E. coli first.
Exactly.
Well, now, here's another question. This is just off of my observation. It seems that beaches can be closed one day, and then you go back to the same beach the next day, and all of a sudden, hey, you can go in and swim in the water. What's the deal with that?
Well, essentially, the source of the contamination may be there one day and not be there the next. For instance, we don't know exactly what all of the sources are, but we do know that a big one is stormwater runoff. In other words, pretty much what it sounds like when it rains and the rainwater runs off, it will carry with it some of these bacteria and contaminants. If it's raining a lot, there are going to be more contaminants. After a dry spell, there will probably be fewer. There are all kinds of variables from day to day that are going to affect what's in the water.
The Natural Resources Defense Council, and which you are a part of, but what exactly is it that you guys do in this issue and other environmental issues?
We do a number of things. First of all, we provide information to the public. As you may be aware, NRDC does an annual report called Testing the Waters, which is essentially a report on beach contamination, beach closings, what's being done about it, and what could be done about it further. So there's the informational piece, and then in addition, there's the advocacy piece, we fight for stronger laws that will prevent these beach closing incidents from happening. And not only on the beaches, but also on other waterways, such as, for instance, the Chicago River, that has even worse problems in terms of bacteria contamination.
Yeah, I want to get into the Chicago River and the other Chicago waterways in just a second. But going back to the whole beach issue and Lake Michigan, what can people do, or is there anything people can do to stop E. coli, to prevent E. coli, or is this just pretty much Mother Nature working her course?
Well, it's really kind of, there's an answer in between there. The main thing that needs to be done is stronger laws governing essentially how to prevent stormwater discharges from causing this problem, and the kind of changes that need to happen, although individual behavior is obviously important. You don't want to feed the seagulls. The seagulls do contribute to this. What really needs to happen is that cities, local communities on the water need to implement what they call green infrastructure. And essentially what that means is various ecologically sound ways that you can purify the stormwater runoff. And just to give you an example of that, if you put a wetland near the water, that serves a purifying function. That means that the stormwater will run through the wetland. It will be cleansed that way before it actually goes out and hits the beaches. You can also have green roofs. It's a similar concept. It's a way of purifying the water that lands on the roof. They have what you call swales, which are essentially natural patches that absorb the water instead of just letting it run off the pavement. There's really a whole list of things that can be done to keep stormwater from being such a problem, but they really need to be implemented by state and local government.
I mentioned that it's really difficult on a hot day when you're on the beach not to go in the water, but if there are red flags and if there are E. coli warnings, how serious is that? People really need to take heed when they see those red flags, don't they?
Let me put it to you this way. If the standards are being met, the assumption by the scientists who set the standards is that 9 out of 1,000 people are still going to get sick from the water. That's if everything is done right. So essentially, you can take from that what to expect if something goes wrong. If there is more contamination than allowable in the water, more people are going to get sick. You're right. You really don't want to be messing with it.
Ann Alexander is a senior attorney at the Natural Resources Defense Council. And that website, by the way, is nrdc.org. And we have just a few minutes here left, and I want to touch on the Chicago rivers, the Chicago waterways. You guys are really, like you said before, advocating a lot of change for the Chicago waterway system. And we're talking about the Chicago River and the branches of that river. But what are some of the projects that you have been working on as of late for the Chicago waterways?
Well, essentially what we have been working on is advocating to require the Metropolitan Sewage District to disinfect the sewage effluent that comes out of its plants. That sounds like it should be a basic thing, and in fact it is, but Chicago is one of a handful of cities in the country that does not disinfect its sewage effluent at all. And as a consequence, the bacterial levels in the Chicago River are extremely high, much worse than anything you're going to find on the Chicago beaches. The assumption of the government officials who have been setting policy so far and of the district is that, well, nobody is really using it for recreational or swimming purposes anyway, so we don't need to worry about it. I think if you go out on any hot Saturday afternoon, you're going to see that that is just not true. And we believe strongly that disinfection needs to occur. The river needs to be cleaned up. It is an amazing potential resource for the city. So we have been pushing hard with government agencies to encourage them to put out regulations that will require disinfection, and we will continue to do so.
That just seems so incredible to me that we're not purifying or treating that sewage that we're dumping into the Chicago River, especially when you've got a mayor who wants to pride himself on being a quote-unquote green mayor.
It's really quite amazing to us, too, is all I can say. I should clarify that the sewage is being treated. It's not that the plants are dumping raw sewage out, but they're not, treating doesn't get rid of the bacteria. You can get all kinds of other things out of it, but if there are bacteria in it, it's going to make you sick. And we agree that Chicago has the potential to be a very green city. Our mayor has recognized that. And we believe that this needs to change, too. Now, this is not there is a city piece of this in the sense that the city has sewage overflows, combined sewer overflows, but this is primarily an issue involving the Metropolitan Sewage Reclamation District and state government and the federal government to the extent they participate in helping set those regulations.
Well, Anne, keep up the good work that you're doing over there at the Natural Resources Defense Council. Anne Alexander is a senior attorney over at the Natural Resources Defense Council. And that website, by the way, again, is nrdc.org. Anne, thanks for talking to us here on Outside the Loop. And again, thanks for all of your hard work. You're doing some really great stuff.
Thank you very much.
Don't let your love be wasted on me. I'm no good at all. Everything I'm hoping to be is all in your...
This is Andy Herman, executive producer of Outside the Loop on your listener-supported community radio, 88.7 WLUW.
And this is your host, Mike Steven. Glad you could join us on the 43rd edition of Outside the Loop Radio. Right now we're listening to some music from Duval. This is off of their 2003 record called Volume and Density. And Duval's website you can check out is duvalmusic.com. You've probably remember them when they were the Smoking Popes. A lot of people love the Smoking Popes. Very cool band. And Duval sounds great, too. Very good stuff. Also, we are, of course, accepting music from local musicians to feature on the show. info@outsidetheloopradio.com. Check out that website, outsidetheloopradio.com, for show audio archives and the podcast of the program. We'd love for you to hit up that website. We're broadcasting from the soundproof booth, as we always do, from our makeshift houseboat for episode 43 on the Chicago River, right by Life's Too Short, underneath the Division Bridge. Andy, as we sit here in the soundproof booth, we are surrounded by high-tech pieces of equipment. But when you think about it, Andy, I think one of my favorite pieces of equipment in the soundproof booth here on Outside the Loop on WLUW, probably one of my favorite pieces of equipment in life, is the telephone.
More than the microphone,
where you can hear your own voice? That's right. Very good. You know what? You bring up a good point. I don't know what I'd do without you, Andy Herman. The telephone, I mean, think about it. We see everyone now with cell phones walking around the community, and it really doesn't matter what city you go to. You could go to a small town, cell phones. Big town, cell phones. Suburbs, everyone's got a cell phone. We use phones a lot for interviews that we do here on the show, and we got to thinking... And this was a story that we also saw recently in the paper about phone numbers and area codes, because with everyone getting cell phones and getting new phones, that's a lot on the phone companies. Those are a lot of numbers, and therefore you need area codes.
Yeah, there's multiple lines, there's fax machines, it's kind of endless.
Now, I remember back in the day here in the Chicagoland area where we had the 312 area code, and that was pretty much it. Do you remember those days? Were you here then?
I was not here then. I moved up in the 773 days.
Okay, because it was 312, then 773 came in, 708, and then 630, and we've got 847 and 815. Well, a story that came out recently, there's a new area code coming to the areas of Aurora, Geneva, Sugar Grove, so pretty much out west. That would be the 331 area code. So we thought we'd call down to Springfield to the Illinois Commerce Commission and talk to Beth Bosch, who is a spokesperson for the Illinois Commerce Commission, and she joins us. How about this? On the telephone from Springfield. Beth, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Good to have you here. And we thought we'd call you because we just had some questions about how all of this area code stuff actually works. Now, I said that the areas affected by this new 331 area code pretty much happening out west of Chicago. That's correct, right?
Yes. And in this, what's currently the 630 area code, the commission made a decision to overlay a new code whenever that was necessary back in 1999. And through number conservation efforts, that is, with telephone companies cooperating and pooling unused numbers, we've been able to extend the life of that area code for about 8 years. But time's running out, numbers are running out, and it won't be long until the new 331s are going to be in play.
So pretty much what you've done, if I'm understanding this correctly, Beth, is that now these 331 numbers will be sprinkled into the 630 area code, thereby extending the life of the 630 area code.
Well, actually, 331 is a new code, and it has all new prefixes in it. The problem with 630 is all the prefixes have been distributed to telephone companies. They may still have some, so if you get a phone or you get a new cell phone, you can probably ask to get a 630 area code. And I imagine for a while they'll have them. But you may also just want a new code. You may want to distinguish yourself with the new code, and those are available too. The problem is at the national level, there just aren't any more prefixes within the 630 area code to distribute to telephone companies, and so now they have to distribute a code 331. So it will just, as you say, be sprinkled in among the 630 area.
Beth Bosch is a spokesperson for the Illinois Commerce Commission. She joins us here on Outside the Loop Radio from Springfield here on the program. And Beth, I wanted to ask you specifically because this program is on the airwaves primarily in Chicago and the outside areas. But what's happening in the Chicagoland area? Are we reaching a capacity? When's that time when the Illinois Commerce Commission is going to say to us, well, we pretty much just don't have any more numbers? Is that a concern?
Well, we looked at 312 in 1999, and we're waiting for the number administrator to tell us the answer to that question.
So pretty much that you have to wait on the word from this administrator.
Right. The commission's role really is to decide whether you should split the area code or you should overlay it. When to do it really rests with the National Number Administrator. They know how many numbers are out there, who's got what, or how many companies have numbers. And so when they know they're running out, they let us know.
Well, we thought we'd just call down to Springfield, and we saw this story this week in the paper, and we thought we'd call Springfield and call the Illinois Commerce Commission. Beth Bosch is a spokesperson for the Illinois Commerce Commission, and she's been good enough to give us some of her time on today's edition of Outside the Loop. Beth, we will be dialing furiously on the telephone. Thank you so much for your time here on the program.
You're very welcome.
Your hand to hold as we get old and everything fades.
Andy, here on Outside the Loop Radio, we like to cover all kinds of local issues. I don't think, though, now this is what, show number 43?
43.
We've done this show 43 weeks. I don't know if we've ever really focused on the local business angle here on the program. This could be a first, an Outside the Loop Radio first.
We're branching out. Look at us.
We're branching out. We're taking all these risks. But we thought that it's an important topic that we should be talking about. And especially when you go from neighborhood to neighborhood and you look at the different shops and the various establishments and stores that each neighborhood has that help make each neighborhood what it is. It helps define the character of these many different neighborhoods throughout Chicago. So Lauren Besnos is on the phone with us right now. She is the executive director of a group called Local First Chicago. She joins us here on Outside the Loop. Lauren, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much.
Nice to have you here. Now, Local First Chicago, I think, is a really cool concept. It's basically, and I want to make sure I'm getting this correct here, it's a group of people, of local business, of nonprofit leaders, and all kinds of different citizens that are coming together to strengthen local business and competition, pretty much. Is that it?
That's exactly right, Mike. Local First Chicago is a nonprofit membership organization that's comprised of locally owned businesses and individuals and organizations that promote locally owned independent businesses in order to preserve the character of our Chicago neighborhoods.
Well, how did this start? How did this all come about?
Local First Chicago was started by a group of individuals because they saw such a need to support locally owned businesses in the city. They saw them getting priced out of neighborhoods and being forced to close because of increased taxes and rent costs, because of competition with chain stores that have a much larger capacity. And they recognize, along with all of our other supporters and members, that locally owned businesses are what makes Chicago, are part of what makes Chicago so fantastic.
You know, it's incredible because I know so many people that when they hear, oh, God, a Starbucks is coming in the neighborhood, that's the reaction is, oh, my God, what am I going to do? You know, a Starbucks is here, and now there's a Walmart here. And, well, what's happening to the local flavor? And I want to just reference this study that came out on your website, or I saw it on your website. That website, by the way, is localfirstchicago.org. A study that came out in 2004 in Andersonville that showed locally owned independent businesses recirculate far more money into the local economy than chain businesses. I think that's pretty staggering.
It is. It's a really wonderful thing to point out because in addition to having the local businesses contribute to the character of the communities, they also contribute greatly to the economics of all of our communities. So every dollar that you spend in your own neighborhood in a locally owned business goes right back to you and to your community and to the schools and the parks, much more so than if you were to spend that money in a chain store.
Lauren, when we talk about the local economy, what do we mean by that? How do we define what local economy is?
According to Local First Chicago's definition of it and how we define businesses that can be members of the organization, we base it upon, is a business owner based in Chicago? Is the business based in Chicago? And are the people who make the decisions local? So if you go to a restaurant, can you go to the restaurant owner and tell them how much you love the sandwich that they serve on their menu? Or if you go to a clothing store and you end up buying a sweater that has a hole in it and you want to take it back, can you talk to the owner? If the answer is yes, then you can be a member of Local First Chicago, generally speaking. So to each community, there's different locally owned businesses, whether you're in Rogers Park or you're in the South Shore or in the West Loop. But according to Local First Chicago's definition, it's Chicago-owned and based businesses.
What neighborhoods in Chicago or what areas have really good local economies? I'm sure that the Lincoln Parks of Chicago are doing great because there's so much there. But what other areas or neighborhoods have great local economies?
Well, there's a lot. I actually had the pleasure of visiting a bunch of locally owned businesses up in Rogers Park last week and visiting a bunch of restaurants owned by local people. And so Rogers Park is a great area. I mean, there's so many different neighborhoods in Chicago that have that local flavor. Hyde Park is another. Humboldt Park is another. I mean, I could just go on and on and on because there's so many, and I know from the top of my head there's many that I'm going to leave off. And it's interesting to me that you would mention Lincoln Park because that is an area that at one point, especially along Armitage, there were tons of locally owned businesses. But as of right now, if you go and you stroll down Armitage, you're going to find many, many more chains than locally owned businesses. So that's an interesting area that you bring up because that was an area that at one point people loved for its charm and its local character, but a lot of the local businesses are getting priced out.
Lauren Besnos is on the phone with us here on Outside the Loop on WLUW. Lauren is the executive director of Local First Chicago. You can check them out online, localfirstchicago.org. Lauren, what do we do then? What has to happen, or what are you guys doing over at Local First Chicago?
The absolute first thing that everyone who's listening can do is to shop at your local businesses. You can ask the people who are working at the businesses if the businesses are, in fact, locally owned. There's some places that you know are chains, and there's some places that you might not know. So that's something that everyone who's listening can easily participate in. Another thing that you can do in order to support the work that Local First Chicago is doing, or to benefit from it yourself if you are a business owner, is to join Local First Chicago. So by going to localfirstchicago.org, your business can become a member. And as a member, you receive all sorts of marketing support, networking events, education events, and advocacy on your behalf. So go to our website at localfirstchicago.org and you can become a member yourself. And you can also, if you're interested, become involved with many of the different events that we have going on and the different issues that we are dealing with.
Again, that website, localfirstchicago.org. Lauren Besnos is the executive director of Local First Chicago. Lauren, thanks so much for talking to us here on Outside the Loop Radio. Now Andy and I have to go just down to every locally owned shop in the north side of Chicago and just blow all of our money and rent checks.
That sounds fantastic. Thanks so much, Mike and Andy.
Thank you so much for listening to another edition of Outside the Loop Radio, Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine. This has been show number 43, and we're here every Friday from 6 to 6:30 on your listener-supported community radio, 88.7 WLUW, and we would love for you to check out the website, OutsideTheLoopRadio.com. Of course, that's linked up through WLUW.org, so that's how you can check out our site. Andy, we've been broadcasting from the soundproof booth. We always love broadcasting from the soundproof booth here on this fine community radio station.
We certainly do.
It's been our makeshift houseboat right on the river, right next to Life's Too Short, the now defunct Life's Too Short.
How far do you think we could take this houseboat?
I don't know. You know what? I really don't want to find out, Andy. I'll be quite honest with you. So tune in next week. We'll be broadcasting from another area of Chicagoland. Copyright 2007.
Albert James Productions.
Don't go anywhere, because Slacky J and the Great Reggae Vibe Show is up next. Thanks to DJ Goldie G. Dave Goldman does our theme song. Lawyer Danny's the lawyer of the program. We need him a lot. Thanks for listening. I'm Mike Steven. He's Andy Herman. And we'll see you next week on another edition of Outside the Loop Radio.
Sail on.